So during these 2 minutes, I'm going to ask a few questions. I think the sound is better like this. Can you hear me? Yeah. So I heard a comment that color was not allowed, so I hope that you won't mind if I use 3D instead. But the screen on the actual device I'm going to talk about is black and white. So who uses a calculator from time to time? Who uses a calculator from their smartphone or whatever? Yeah, it's the majority. Who uses HP-style calculators? Not that many. It's mostly. Who uses calculators for binary computations? Okay. Complex numbers, in matrices, graphing. Okay. Just checking. So I don't think that the camera can zoom that far, right? So I can't show that, I suspect.
Yeah, it'll be hard.
But so this is the device I'm talking about. You're going to see pictures.
I'll hold up a sign 5 minutes before question time.
Yep. It's the dot. For me, it is.
I don't know what's wrong with my timer. It's Android.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So, I'm Christophe Delincha. I'm working as a senior principal software engineer at Red Hat, working on confidential computing. I'm giving a talk on this topic this afternoon. But today, I'm talking about a pet project of mine called DB48X, which is an open source HP48 style calculator for modern ARM hardware. So I talked about this last year, and I'm going to show how much progress we made since then. I start with a reminder of what DB48X is. We are going to review last year's future plans to see how well we did. I'm going to talk from one engineer to another, that's why I asked the questions at the beginning, to see why we need all this math in the calculator. I'm going to extol the virtues of 1980s era efficiency when there were only keyboards, no touch screen, no fancy mouse, all that stuff. I'm going to explain how using much bigger numbers led to much less memory usage. And we are going to see a number of bells, whistles, and engineering units along the way. So I hope you enjoyed. Strap on. What is DB48X? The idea is really to revive Hewlett-Packard's iconic reverse polish Lisp on modern ARM hardware. So that's what the original box looked like. And a quick primer on the project, we want to simply put, reinvent the best calculators in the world, nothing less. It's designed to run on existing hardware from a company in Switzerland called Swiss Micros that does these kind of devices. So you see the DM32 on the right and the DM42 on the left. The specs for the project are from the HP manuals, and there are dozens of them. Unfortunately, they contradict one another because various calculators do not do exactly the same thing. So it implements a language called Reverse Polish Lisp, or RPL, which is a stack-based language, very powerful. It's based on command line and menus that you activate with keys below, function keys below the keyboard, the screen, sorry. It has many data types and mathematical operations. I'm going to talk about this later. And many enhancements in the project compared to what HP did. Now, is this still minimalist? Well, you bet, because that machine has 70K of free RAM and 700K total for the program space, hence the title of the talk. So it's a low-power Cortex M4 at 80 megahertz. The battery life is up to 3 years on this kind of battery. And one of the things that is nice is that the screen is passive. So when you switch off the calculators, it displays a picture, and the picture stays there forever. So that's really I have pictures of my wife on my calculator. The machine has only 96K of RAM, and if you remove the bitmap, which is a high-res bitmap, and the operating system needs, then you get to the 70K I was talking about. So 96K is 1.5 Commodore 64 for the old-timers among us. It has only 2 megabytes of flash. It has 8 megs in the chip, but 6 are for a flash disk. And so there are 700K remaining for your program. That's less than a Macintosh floppy disk. There were 800K. The project did hit these limits quite hard. I'm going to explain how we worked around that. So last year, I explained that I had to restart from scratch from a project called New RPL because we hit these limits. This year, around Christmas, I hit the limits again, so I had to restart from re-scratch, at least as far as decimal computations are concerned. So I'm going to explain that. So let's review last year's future plans. I think there is a problem with the sound. Is the sound okay, or is it? Yeah, okay. So I said, you know, back in 2023, I was young and naive, and I said, a lot remains to be done. So I was talking about adding complex numbers, vector and matrix arithmetic, about 1,500 functions that were left to implement, and key features like plotting and graphing. So what did we do? Well, a lot of this was done. Complex numbers are available, and they are actually much better than the original. For instance, you can have polar and rectangular. You have the usual notations. You have stuff like that. We have vector and matrix arithmetic fully implemented. So that's linear algebra, but also with exact computations like fractions inside matrices. So you never get a rounding error, unlike on the HP calculators. That's the test suite. So the test suite runs on a simulator on Linux or macOS, and it currently runs about 2,200 tests. Not everything is tested. Stats, for instance, is implemented, but not tested yet. And we have plotting and graphing, at least the basic features, like drawing stuff, etc., with some nice enhancements compared to what HP did. Like, for instance, we can have plots with various sizes and plot patterns. So I'm going to show that in a moment. And that lets you draw multiple things on the same screen and see what the different pieces are. It just was very fast on the screen here. So how did we go to use only 70K? It's a story of ultimate over-engineering. It's C++ with garbage collection and ubiquitous backpacking all over the place. Let me explain what I mean with that. A C++ object typically looks like this. You have a class, and the way this is represented in memory is you have a virtual table pointer, and then you have the value for the object. So in that case, for the integer, you'd have an integer value or an unsigned value. And then there is some overhead for malloc itself, or operator new, or whatever. You have, for instance, a linked list or a free list or something like that. So overall, for your object representing an unsigned value, you typically use 12 bytes. 12 bytes, that's a 32-bit CPU. So that lets you represent all values up to 4 billion. And it's fixed size. You can't really move it in memory. Not good. Let's do better. So the representation we use looks like something like that. We use LEB128, which is a system that is used, for instance, in Dwarf all over the place. And that lets us code the ID that is used for to identify the type of object as 1 byte for integers. We have 128 types that we can represent with 1 byte. And the value, if it's less than 128, is also on 1 byte. So that means that I use only 2 bytes of memory. That's a 6x factor compared to the other representation for all values below 128. And I can move to infinity because the LEB128 is a variable size encoding, so I can essentially have numbers that are as big as I want. It's now a variable size object, and I can move it. So it's a vast improvement. That lets me have a memory organization where I have at the bottom of memory all the global variables, the global objects that I keep. It's essentially a name, a value, a name, a value. And then, so they are all packed together. And then on top of that, I have temporaries that move with a temporary pointer that moves as you allocate objects. And then there is an editor, scratch pad, and the transient stuff on top of that. Because it's all contiguous, the way to reach the next object is to skip by reading the ID and computing the size to get to the next object. So on top of memory, you have root pointers that point back, so like the stack, the local variables, that kind of stuff, that point back to this memory area at the bottom. And the root pointers can point inside object. That's a very important property for performance. For instance, if you follow the one link, you'll see that it points just behind a thing like with curly braces. It means it's part of a list, And I can put the value that is inside the list directly on the stack. So I can do the computations faster that way. And there's also a series of smart pointer classes. The names end in _G in the source code that let me have garbage collected smart pointers. The allocation is super cheap because it's essentially I'm moving the pointer at the top of the scratch space like this. So it's just one addition and one comparison. And the comparison is to see, okay, am I out of memory? Do I need to garbage collect? So very, very cheap allocation. The garbage collection itself, as your memory grows and you allocate more and more stuff, so at some point memory gets slow. The unreferenced temporaries, you no longer need them, so what you do is you copy the referenced object down and you adjust the pointers. And then you move the editing part of the scratch pad down and you reclaim your free space that way. So the good point of this approach is that there is no memory overhead at all. There is not a single byte that is used for metadata or linked list or anything like that. The sub-object, so pointers to objects inside a list, for instance, don't cost me extra at all either. If you know something about garbage collectors and you think of a mark and sweep garbage collector, for instance, it needs some metadata about sub-objects. And so that means you have extra cost for objects inside objects. And it's a single pass garbage collector, so it's simple code. Easy to maintain, but the downside is that it's slow. It's essentially a quadratic behavior, number of stack objects times number of objects instead of linear or close to linear that you could get otherwise. So it's a usual trade-off of space for speed. So why use C++ at all? Well, it's because of template metaprogramming.